Wednesday, January 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the White House says President Joe Biden does not intend to unilaterally send U.S. troops to Ukraine.
Just to be clear, there is no intention or interest or desire by the president to send troops to Ukraine. NATO is a forum to support our eastern flank partners and countries, and that's what the focus has been on.
Ukraine's leader seeks to reassure the nation that a feared invasion from Russia is not imminent.
Several rounds of high-stakes diplomacy last week failed to yield any breakthroughs. NATO says it's bolstering its deterrence in the Baltic Sea region.
And Asian communities are getting ready for the Lunar New Year in February amid surging COVID infections. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said on Tuesday that President Joe Biden does not intend to send U.S. troops unilaterally to Ukraine. This after Washington put some 8,500 troops on alert to reassure NATO allies in the face of a Russian military buildup. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby said on Monday the bulk of the 8,500 U.S. troops were being notified of ready-to-deploy orders so they could fill in the ranks of a NATO rapid response force should the alliance call them up for duty. Western leaders stepped up preparations for any Russian military action in Ukraine on Tuesday, with the United States focusing on how to protect energy supplies and Britain urging other European nations to get economic sanctions ready. Psaki said the United States was in talks with major energy-producing countries and companies around the world over a potential diversion of supplies to Europe if Russia invades Ukraine.
Just to be clear, there is no intention or interest or desire by the president to send troops to Ukraine. NATO is a forum to support our eastern flank partners and countries, and that's what the focus has been on. Well, no one can get into the mind of President Putin or Russian leadership. We all know that is the case. What we have seen is a range of preparations, including 100,000 troops at the border, bellicose rhetoric, and actions, as we've talked about in here, including false flag operations to try to spread misinformation throughout the region and even the world, setting up the predicate for an invasion. So while, of course, our preferred path is diplomacy and we can't predict where the mind of President Putin is, we've certainly seen aggressive actions and preparations increasing at the border.
That's White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. Ukraine's leaders are seeking to reassure the nation that a feared invasion from neighboring Russia is not imminent. This after the U.S. placed thousands of troops on alert. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Those comments come even as officials acknowledge the threat is real and are prepared to accept a shipment of American military equipment to shore up their defenses. Russia has denied it's planning an assault, but it has massed an estimated 100,000 troops near Ukraine in recent weeks, leading the U.S. and its NATO allies to rush to prepare for a possible war. Several rounds of high-stakes diplomacy last week failed to yield any breakthroughs. NATO says it's bolstering its deterrence in the Baltic Sea region, while the U.S. has ordered 8,500 troops on higher alert. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
A shortage of truck drivers in the U.S. has led to all kinds of trouble for consumers and businesses. This has led to some trucking companies doing all they can to get new drivers on the road. VOA's Anshuman Apte has more from New York City.
Karina De Jesus is practicing how to reverse park a tractor trailer, also known as a truck, on a quiet street corner in Bronx, New York. She is a school bus driver who aspires to be a truck driver. To learn the parking technique, she enrolled in New York Commercial Driving School.
I don't see this as a challenge. I think the same way the men can do it, women can do it. I think it's equality is the most important thing right now. I know as a mom, probably it's a little bit hard for me, but I'm not planning to go like to different states. I'm planning to do local most of the work.
According to data compiled by the American Trucking Association, there were approximately 167,000 women truck drivers in 2001. That grew to more than 260,000 in 2020. Other minorities, such as African Americans, Hispanics, and Asians, saw their representation rise from roughly 26% in 2001 to 42% in 2020. According to the group, the industry has had a truck driver shortage for several years and is now short of some 80,000 truck drivers. Trucking companies and other businesses are increasing pay and benefits right. for newcomers. The schools are also benefiting from the surge in driving school enrollments. These are really big and really dangerous vehicles. And there is a lot to learn before drivers can get on the road. To address the driver shortage, trucking businesses and industry groups are collaborating with policymakers on initiatives like lowering the interstate driving age limit. But getting new drivers on the road isn't just about getting the training. According to industry insiders, the driver shortage will progressively ease as more people join the trucking business. And it will also change the face of the trucking industry, which has been dominated by mostly white male truck drivers for decades. Aushman Apte, VOA News, New York City.
Supporters of Burkina Faso's military have welcomed Monday's coup as the armed forces are seen as key in the fight against Islamic militants. Analysts say the military takeover and attempted assassination of deposed President Roch Kabore raises concerns about long-term stability and a return to democracy. Reporter Henry Wilkins has the details.
On Monday evening, after taking control of the national TV station earlier in the day, a group of 14 soldiers appeared on screen with this message.
Au regard de la dégradation continue de la situation sécuritaire,
the soldiers said they had seized power in the West African country and dissolved the Kabore government. It marked the end of a two-day mutiny by the army, the end of Kabore's six-year rule, and the only period of democracy in Burkina Faso's history. While French President Emmanuel Macron has condemned the coup, as has the US State Department, on Tuesday morning, more than 1,000 pro-coup demonstrators gathered in the centre of Ouagadougou to celebrate the military takeover. One of the demonstrators, air traffic controller Djibré Traoré, said the country has become unsafe.
But so far, we don't have a real response to terrorism. So from Ouagadougou, we are not even able to step more than 100 kilometers after Ouagadougou. Okay, when are we going to live in safety in our country?
Kabore and his government had come under increasing criticism for failing to subdue groups with links to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda militants. The terrorist threat provoked a military coup in neighbouring Mali last year. Paul Mellet, an analyst with London-based research group Chatham House, doubts that Monday's takeover will have a positive effect.
The coup in Burkina Faso doesn't really do anything to take the country forward in terms of stability and organising a response either to the security crisis or to the re-establishment of some sort of clear roadmap forward in political terms. Because the constitutional institutions have been suspended, the country is now at risk of being under sanctions from ECOWAS.
On Tuesday afternoon, West African political bloc ECOWAS announced it sees Burkina Faso's power shift as a military coup, which could indicate a step towards political and economic sanctions. ECOWAS recently imposed sanctions on Mali because its military leaders have tried to extend the transition to civilian rule by 5 years. Andrew Leibovich is an analyst with the European Council on Foreign Relations.
I think it's a bit too early to say what's going to happen in terms of democracy for the new military leadership. I think certainly it's very unlikely that they're going to turn over power anytime soon, and the model in the region, looking at Guinea, looking at Mali, has been to push for a much longer transition timeline.
The soldiers who have taken over the country are yet to announce who Burkina Faso's president will be, while the whereabouts of former President Kabore is still not known. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
A coordinated attack by Islamic State on a Kurdish-run prison in the northern Syrian city of Al-Hasakah last week has exposed the squalid conditions for detainees and put thousands of civilians at risk. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Dozens of inmates escaped. Many of them are suspected of being IS members. The attack sparked fighting between the militants and Kurdish-led Syrian defense forces who govern the area. In response to the attacks, UN human rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says international forces have carried out several airstrikes near the prison. She says the raids have put civilians in the area at risk and endangered the lives of inmates.
We are particularly disturbed by reports that significant number of boys, possibly several hundred, are held there and are extremely concerned for their safety and well-being. There are allegations by the SDF that those apparently affiliated with ISIL are holding these children as human shields. We haven't been able to confirm these allegations.
The large Guerin prison houses an estimated 5,000 male detainees, many in prolonged pretrial detention or internment. The inmates include Iraqi and Syrian nationals, as well as suspected IS fighters, also known as ISIL. Shamdasani describes the prison conditions as appalling.
We have previously warned about the squalid and insecure state of detention facilities run by the SDF, where detainees are held in overcrowded conditions, do not have access to proper medical care, and cannot see their families. They're languishing in these squalid conditions over more than 2 years, overcrowded together. It's a recipe for violence, and it's a recipe for some kind of an eruption. It is very important that there is international attention to this situation, which is a ticking time bomb.
The United Nations also remains concerned about the situation of more than 60,000 women and children with family links to IS. They've been confined in displacement camps for several years. While most are from Syria and Iraq, thousands are from other countries. UN officials are urging the countries of origin to repatriate their nationals, especially women and children, in accordance with their obligations under international law. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
SDF's snowstorm battering Greece is growing into a political crisis, with the main opposition leader calling on Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis to resign and hold snap elections. The call comes after thousands of people were left trapped along a main highway near the capital, Athens. Anthi Karasava reports on what is being called, quote, a fiasco, unquote, in the Greek government's response to the storm.
Heart-wrenching appeals like this one by Christos, a 74-year-old motorist trapped in his car for 22 hours, have triggered public and political fury. Please, 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 Christos cried to a television presenter. Please show us some mercy. Tell them to open the road to help us. We are freezing. We have been left without any petrol. Nothing to tide us over, Christos says. Rescue crews working through the night have so far managed to evacuate some 3,500 drivers on a key motorway that Homeland Security forces promised ahead of the storm to keep open, but didn't, leaving thousands of motorists stranded in snow, with rescue crews blocked from accessing those in distress. Despite efforts, about 1,200 others remain stuck on the Attikiodos motorway that circles the Greek capital, and thousands more on other roads and highways snaking through Athens, which is home to about half the country's population of 11 million. 15 passengers were injured when a rail transport vehicle tried to pull a train carrying more than 200 passengers in heavy snow on Monday. Much of the capital has also been left without heat and electricity, sending hundreds of families streaming to their cars as temperatures dip below freezing. On Tuesday, Christos Silianidis, Greece's climate crisis and civil protection minister, apologized, but he said it was no time to enter into a blame game. We are focused on managing this unprecedented crisis, he told a news briefing after back-to-back crisis talks with Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis. He reiterated the government's apology for its failed response and for troubling, as he put it, thousands of people. He also announced schools, public services and banks would be shut down for an extra day in three regions in Greece, including the capital. But the public's fury remains so intense amid the failings of the system that a public prosecutor has ordered an urgent investigation into why the nation's most important motorway was left unattended for so long. Alexis Tsipras, the main opposition leader, wants the government to resign and hold elections immediately. He said in a statement issued Tuesday that he laid blame squarely upon Mitsotakis and that the country would be better off, as he put it, without him and a government unable to manage a snowstorm. Snowfall is common in the Greek highlands, but extremely rare in the center of Athens and the country's islands. Mitsotakis has refrained from making any comment or even appearing at any distressed location. Aides to the Prime Minister tell VOA, though, that he is pushing to compensate trapped motorists with at least €2,000 each, or just more than $2,250. I'm Vikara Sava for VOA News, Athens.
Asian communities around the world are getting ready for the Lunar New Year on February 1st. As Mike O'Sullivan reports, the Omicron variant of the coronavirus has put a damper on festivities, but Asian Americans in many U.S. cities are determined to celebrate virtually or with conventional parades.
Some of the usual Lunar New Year parades and festivals in the United States are canceled, as they were last year. But the San Francisco Chinatown parade resumes after a one-year gap. That's good news for a man who leads a lion dance troupe, a traditional form of entertainment. His troupe will take part in the parade this year, vaccinated and masked. It is the year of the tiger and another year of COVID, this time the Omicron variant. And in San Francisco's Chinatown, the largest outside Asia, some plan to delay the usual New Year gatherings. The Lunar New Year is usually a busy time for Chinatown businesses and restaurants, but not this year due to the pandemic. Supply chain problems and shortages have also had an impact, hurting this family-run business that sells ritual items and decorations from China, creating shortages of some holiday goods and specialty food. In Los Angeles Chinatown, people are also ready, and the Chinatown parade is still on track. People pray for better times in the year of the tiger. As one temple prepares to welcome holiday visitors in Southern California's Little Saigon neighborhood, they are ready to welcome the year of an animal known for bravery and strength, but also its cruelty. Facing another challenging year, a Vietnamese section of Northern Virginia is bustling. But sponsors have canceled a Chinatown parade in the nation's capital, creating a virtual program instead due to COVID. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
In a California senior care community, very special pets are helping residents keep their spirits up, fight anxiety, and feel loved. Officials say these animals are therapeutic, low maintenance, and never get moody. Angelina Bagdasaryan has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
The Roundtree Gardens Senior Care Facility in California accommodates elderly people who suffer from dementia and Alzheimer's disease. So these cute-looking robotic cats and dogs are more than just company. Officials say they are therapeutic and help retirees fight depression and anxiety. The pets look so realistic, some residents say it's easy to forget they're not real. Orange County has purchased 200 such cats and dogs. Three times a week, the nursing home residents spend a few hours doing tactile therapy. Residents now have the option of spending time with their cats or dogs. For Angelina Bagdasaryan in Stanton, California, Anna Rice, VOA News.
In other news, Pfizer and BioNTech have begun studying a COVID-19 vaccine tweaked to match to the Omicron variant in healthy adults. COVID-19 vaccine makers have been updating their shots in case global health authorities decide a change is needed. The new study will include more than 1,400 volunteers ages 18 to 55. Most already are vaccinated and will get boosters of the Omicron-based vaccine or the original version. Some unvaccinated volunteers will get three Omicron-based doses. The original vaccine still offers good protection against severe illnesses and death, and a booster improves the chances of avoiding even a milder infection. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afua in Washington. In mid-January, the average number of daily new COVID cases in the U.S. fluctuated between 750,000 and 800,000. According to the CDC COVID data tracker, children under 5 remain one of the most vulnerable groups since they cannot be vaccinated yet. In the first week of January, over 500,000 young children were diagnosed with COVID-19, an 80% increase compared to late December 2021. Maria Prus has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
In August, at just 3 months old, Baker Mills entered an Atlanta children's hospital with COVID-19. Although Baker had relatively mild symptoms,
doctors still decided to hospitalize him due to his young age. As of mid-January, about 8.5 million U.S. children had tested positive for the coronavirus. About 11% of those cases were confirmed during a two-week period in January of 2022. While children generally have milder symptoms, the speed at which Omicron spreads is overstraining the system. Children under 5 remain one of the most vulnerable groups because vaccines have yet to be approved for this youngest age group. As a result, many parents are opting to not send their little ones to daycare and pre-K. Yelena Wheeler, mother of 5-year-old CJ and 8-year-old Cambria, is among them.
And now the school districts are like, we don't have funds. We're not going to do mandatory testing. And so come send your child. We can't guarantee it's safe. I mean, we understand nothing is guaranteed safe. But it's one thing if all other districts were not doing mandatory testing. But one of our biggest districts right next door to us, 3 blocks away from here, LAUSD, has mandatory testing. And we don't.
But for other parents, COVID is now a part of life, and there is not much that can be done to avoid it altogether. In early January, U.S. Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona encouraged schools in the country to remain open for in-person learning. Many authorities recognize that online education has been hard on both children and parents, and that every school district is different. By mid-January, 64% of teenagers aged 12 to 17 in the U.S. were fully vaccinated, according to the CDC. Authorities are encouraging parents of younger children to vaccinate their younger kids aged 5 to 12, as doctors are preparing to deal with the rising surge in younger patients. For Maria Prus in Washington, NRI's VOA News.
A new vaccine has entered the pool of shots against COVID-19. This one aims to reach low- and middle-income countries where vaccine access has lagged behind that of wealthier countries. But it's not clear what role it will play in the evolving pandemic. VOA Steve Barragona has more.
The new vaccine, developed at Baylor College of Medicine, is 90% effective against the original COVID-19 coronavirus and 80% against the Delta variant. Data on Omicron is coming. The vaccine is also cheap, refrigerator stable, and easy to manufacture in developing countries, says team co-lead Dr. Peter Hotez.
So when you start going down the checklist, this checks all the boxes for what you need for a global health vaccine.
Hotez and colleagues use the same old tried and true technology that they've used to develop vaccines against neglected tropical diseases, those that Big Pharma is less inclined to treat. Because that's what's most available to vaccine makers in low- and middle-income countries, he says.
That's why I was so disheartened at the beginning of the pandemic when everyone was focusing on new technologies. I knew that would be a barrier to access.
Wealthier nations poured money into making new technology vaccines. Now about 80% of people in upper-income countries have been vaccinated, but only about 10% in low-income countries have. And Hotez and colleagues are making the vaccine available without patents. He says intellectual property rights just get in the way during a global crisis.
If your house is on fire and you can only have time to make one phone call, you don't call a patent attorney, you call the fire department, and we're the fire department.
The Indian government recently authorized the vaccine, and Indian company Biological E is making hundreds of millions of doses a month under the name Corbevax. Companies in Indonesia, Bangladesh, and Botswana are planning production too. But it's not clear whether Corbevax will hold up as well as the new technology vaccines against the Omicron variant, says Johns Hopkins University vaccine expert Dr. William Moss.
The Sinopharm, Sinovac vaccines, those are an older technology. They are not doing well against Omicron. Very much reduced vaccine effectiveness.
Global supplies of other vaccines are improving. The United Nations-backed COVAX program recently delivered its 1 billionth dose. Big drug makers are promising billions more doses this year. And other new vaccines are entering the market. But if it holds up against variants, a low-cost vaccine like Corbevax will still be useful because COVID-19 will be with us for years to come, Moss says.
We'll be kind of transitioning into this kind of endemic mode and more routine vaccination, and that's where these vaccines may play a role.
Experts say a regular shot against multiple COVID-19 strains could be in everyone's future. The less it costs, the better. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
2 years ago Tuesday, the first case of COVID-19 was detected in Australia. The disease will trigger some of the world's toughest coronavirus controls. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The first confirmed case of the new coronavirus in Australia was a man in his 50s who'd spent time in the Chinese city of Wuhan, where the infectious disease was first detected. 2 years later, Australia has recorded 1.6 million infections and more than 3,000 people have died, according to official government data. Health officials report that the number of COVID-19 patients in New South Wales hospitals, the nation's most populous state, is at almost 3,000, the highest level since the pandemic began. New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet has paid tribute Tuesday in Sydney to the state's medical staff.
Can I begin by thanking our health workers right across our state who are doing an inspirational and amazing job during these challenging times, as they have been over the last 2 years, in keeping people safe in our health system.
However, experts are optimistic the current Omicron wave may have peaked in Australia. 93% of eligible Australians have received two doses of a COVID-19 vaccine. New South Wales Chief Health Officer Dr. Kerry Chant has stressed the importance of receiving a booster shot.
For those with underlying health conditions, I just want to acknowledge that it's been a difficult time throughout the pandemic and a difficult time recently. But can I re-emphasise that booster doses will give you significant additional protection against severe disease.
New South Wales has Tuesday extended its indoor mask mandates and capacity limits for cafes and restaurants for at least another month. The pandemic prompted Australia to bring in some of the world's toughest disease control measures, including international border closures, lockdowns, and vaccine mandates for key workers. Many foreign travellers remain barred from entering the country. Borders between Australia's six states and two main territories have also been closed during the pandemic. Western Australia's plans to reopen its internal borders on February 5 have been postponed indefinitely because of the Omicron wave sweeping the rest of the country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is Science in a Minute.
After traveling 1.5 million kilometers in 30 days, the James Webb Space Telescope, or JWST, has reached its home at Lagrange Point 2, or L2. According to a NASA press release, JWST's orbit will provide a broad view of space at any time. Webb's orbit will also allow the optics of its telescope and scientific instruments to get to a temperature that will be cold enough to function and perform the best possible science. As the JWST made its way to its destination, controllers successfully deployed key components of the space telescope. After Webb undergoes a cool down and turns on its instruments, members of the JWST team will begin to test and calibrate the state-of-the-art space telescope before it can begin to make observations. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Coming up, a conversation with Michael Waldman, president of the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University's School of Law. We'll talk with him about the significance of passing federal voting rights legislation despite a recent failed attempt to do so. The fight for voting rights in America, that's Press Conference USA, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at VONnews.com. Until next time, I am Senator from Washington, wishing you a great day.
This is the voice of America. Washington, ba 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 zip.